Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This month's program is titled 12 Sales Mistakes Technicians Make and How to Avoid Them by Kenny Chapman. Tom, there's an unbelievable amount of information available on sales training. What makes Kenny's presentation unique?
Well, you're right, Bill. But Kenny is unique in several different ways. First of all, this presentation is directed towards technicians in the field, of which there's far less information available. Secondly, Kenny isn't just talking theory. He was a tech, selling in the field for many, many years. Also, a huge portion of his company, the Blue Collar Coach, involves Kenny actually riding with techs so he can listen, learn, and coach right on the spot. And lastly, this presentation doesn't just leave the listener with some hypothetical theory. It provides easy, basic information that can literally be used right away.
Well, there's no question. You know, Tom, there's two things that jumped out at me. First was his example of the car salesman that was telling him the benefits of having a DVD player in the vehicle for his kids. The salesperson never even asked Kenny if he had children. He doesn't. He just presented the features and benefits without asking questions. The other thing that jumped out was his statement, if everything is the same, then price becomes an issue. When nothing is the same, price can't become the issue. That is food for thought. Well, an entrepreneur at heart, Kenny built a highly successful plumbing and HVAC company called Peterson Plumbing. He authored a book called The Six Dimensions of Change, and writes monthly columns for Plumbing and Mechanical magazine. Kenny has also been seen on ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox, as well as being featured in USA Today. Kenny developed his exclusive blue-collar coaching system based on the need for personalized solutions to everyday challenges that fellow business owners experience. He became certified E-Myth trainer and has created a powerful sales training school for technicians. He's also established an extensive library of life-changing tools and programs, covering topics such as leadership, strategy, life balance, and planned implementation. Kenny believes in complete honesty and effective communication in all areas of his life and business. And that's led him to his coaching and training company motto, Real People, Real Results, No BS. And now, with 12 sales mistakes technicians make and how to avoid them, here's Kenny Chapman with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. I know that one of the resources we all share as entrepreneurs and as contractors is time, and time is one that's incredibly valuable. So thank you so much for being here. I'm not here to waste yours, here to add value and help you avoid some of these things. So, you know, just quickly, if you don't know much about me, I started in this business in 1994 as a dead broke drain cleaner by myself in a truck, three sewer machines, and a 1987 Mazda pickup, and I hated my life. I hated everything about the job, the business, the customers, not to mention the sewage and all these types of things, and I beat my head against the wall for a couple of years, and then I had an opportunity. I used to interview successful people just because I believe success leaves clues. And I got to go to lunch with a guy that said, it's fine if you want to get out of this business, but until you do, be the absolute best at it. And as simple as that sounds, my friends, that completely altered the course of my life. And it's part of what one of my mentors calls strategic byproducts. The reason we're here together is because I had a low tolerance level of being a dead broke carpet cleaner. One of the things I speak to our tribe about is our level of tolerance in this business is it's incredibly high. We put up with so much stuff. And some of that ties to what I'm going to talk about today, because as Paul mentioned, I still own a portion of the business that I started in 94. I've brought in some other business partners and have an operator on site there. I split time between Arizona and Colorado, and I focus on helping entrepreneurs, or I should say business operators, move to business owners. And one of the ways we do that is kind of like the game of golf. If you can manage mistakes, really good things happen. So we need to swing for the fence sometimes. But today, I really just want to get in and talk to you about what these are. I do a lot of ride-alongs. I've ridden 1,000 service calls, and I observe, I see the client interaction, so I teach it in the classroom, and then I put on a company uniform, I get in the truck, and I see all these types of things. So I'm going to cover the mistakes, I'm going to cover how to avoid them and some things you can do inside. I'm also going to cover some of the tools that we use and our clients use in order to make this happen. And the bottom line at the end of this, I'm going to ask you to take action, and I'm going to ask you to invest a dollar today. $1 in yourself, in your company, in your life. Nothing happens without action. Tony Robbins says nothing's more powerful than a changed mind, and we have some tools that can help you do that. But I also have some tools that you can completely run with on your own, in your own business, in your own life, and really manage some of these things that we see and that frustrate us as operators, owners, and contractors. So let's jump in. Mistake number one, talk too much, right? So we see this, and as I watch technicians begin to kind of ramble, right? You just start going off on this tangent. I see it in nerves, I see it with lack of confidence, and I see it with ego regarding product, right? So as we see things change, and they'll continue to change as Googlebot Nest, and you know, as systems continue to change in all of our verticals with technology coming on and all the different things that happen, the technicians that really study some of this really want to talk about it. But they don't talk about it from a client benefit standpoint. They talk about it from, you know, the gizmos and gadgets and the things that they talk about in the shop. And so, you know, there's too much technical sometimes. And what we want to do is reel them back in, because silence has value. And they're concerned about that. And one of the things that we do is we preach listening. So if you're talking too much, right, it's the old cliche. One of my business partners, Kelly, talks, you know, the old, you got one mouth and two ears. Use them accordingly and different things like that. And one of the backbones of our membership is our what we call our instant meeting maker. So I didn't type it all out here. We just abbreviate it to IMM, and that's videos. We have over 60 of those that are videos, 18, 20 minutes, where I teach your technicians, you print out an action guide. One of those is active listening. But I want you to think about types of listening today. And some of you are experiencing this right now. Since I can't see you, Paul and I were talking about video chats before we got on here today. Since I can't see you, some of you are messing on Facebook, some of you are walking in and out of the room, some of you are actually engaged, some of you are sitting with a notepad and a pen, ready to take notes, ready to change your life, ready to improve your business, right? So you've got this active listening when people are really engaged, right? So we think about, say, a dating example, right? When you first are dating somebody, you're just so into them. And I remember the first date with the lovely Christy, I was so into, like, how, you know, where'd you go to school? What was college like? How long have you lived in the area? I'm learning. And now, you know, 10, 11 years later, what do I get? Kenny, I told you that yesterday, right? So the same can happen with clients. And if technicians don't consciously work on this, things get challenged. You know, so active is where we want them. Then you move. There's another one that's passive, right? Where you're just kind of coming and going, whatever, not really paying attention. And I see that way too often. And then sometimes we get the technicians that get into the what we call impatient listening, right? And that we all know what that looks like. I think that people, when it comes to communication and conversation, I think you're either looking to go deeper or you're looking to escape. And I see too often that clients want to go a little bit deeper, but technicians sometimes want to escape, right? So make sure that your training, your platform, when you're having your meetings, make sure that you're paying attention to how they're listening when you're doing ride-alongs and things like that. Mistake number two, making presumptions versus questions. Questions set you free. If you're taking notes, write that down. Questions will absolutely set you free. So, you know, when you think about this, several years ago, Christy and I went to buy a new SUV, and you know, and I'm going to tie back to this. I use this slick Willie used car guy for a reason, right? So we all know this analogy is overrun, but I'm going to tie back to it towards the end of our time together here today. But I bring it up because, you know, we upped on a lot. We're driving a car, a very similar car, 2 years older, Denali. We're looking at an Escalade at the time, very similar vehicles, you know, and so we're literally driving a very similar car. And this young, he's a younger guy. I don't know if he's fresh out of sales training. It sure didn't appear that way, and he probably had none. And so the reality is we get on there, he starts telling us about the Sirius XM radio and how amazing it is, and turn it on and look at all the channels. And we're like, we've had that for 10 years. I don't want to hear about that. And then he goes into all the areas of, oh, you know, look at the, it's got DVD players in the rear, you know, in the back seats, and you can throw in a DVD and the kids can watch when you guys are traveling. Well, number one, he doesn't know if we travel because he hasn't asked me. Number two, we don't have children. So he's trying to sell me a benefit of something that certainly is beneficial for certain people, but not us, because it's not based on us. It's based on him. He might have kids. He might think it's cool, whatever, but that's not what it's about. He didn't ask us, you know, do I ski? We were living in Colorado at the time, and now we split time, but we're in Colorado. Do you ski? Do you go to the mountains? I was going on a lot of golf trips at the time. Maybe we're taking couples. Maybe the DVD would make sense to me if, whatever, my buddies can play golf games in the back while we're going on a boys trip, you know, whatever that looks like. So when you're working with technicians, understand that the exact same product, take a water heater, you can have the exact same water heater be purchased by two different clients for two different reasons. So the technician needs to find out what's important before they make a presumption of what they think is important. Don't spend your client's money. That's ultimately what it comes down to. So we've got videos on profitable relationship questions, power because is so important. I mean, there was a study done where they went out and interviewed panhandlers, and they took these people that are homeless or on the site, half of them aren't homeless, they have cell phones and cars and whatever, that's a whole nother story. But nonetheless, they go out there and people would say, all I want you to do is add the word because. And so it'd be like, oh, can I get 5 cents or can I get, you know, a dollar or whatever. It didn't matter whether they said, can I get $5 so I can go get a pizza? Can I get $5 to go to McDonald's? Can I get $5 to go get a beer? Whatever that was, the percentage of people that gave them money increased 4 to 5 times depending on the situation. So it's very important that we work those in to when we're having the conversation with clients, because this is what it's going to do for you. Now, sell me a pen exercise. There's a great exercise I do with when I'm on site with clients, different scenarios with technicians when I'm working directly with them. Try this at your meeting. Hit me up if you want a little help on structuring it and how to do it. But there's what I do is I tell them, I say, okay, I'm going to have you sell me a pen, and you're going to, you know, create the pen and whatever. And so I have them go through the entire thing. And they, what's awesome is you watch technicians, they have so much trouble coming up with benefits about electrical and plumbing and heating and air conditioning and all this, you know, that's like, oh, there's no benefits and all that. And then I say, well, you know, sell me this pen. And they come up with all kinds of stuff. Thing will ride underwater. When we had a $100,000 presidential pen that Ronald Reagan signed in, you know, bills into office, you know, whatever. It's just like they get so creative. But then I come back and I ruin them at the end a little bit, because I say, you know what? Several great presentations, that's all good, but I wouldn't buy a pen from any of you. And they're like, well, what do you mean? I'm just, because I'm looking for a pen to prop the window open in my office. And you just watch them. You pull that exercise off right, you will change some people's minds about sales, because they'll go, wow. I mean, they make amazing presentations because it's safe. They don't, it's not about their product. It's not about, and they can, you know, they can make it up. But then when I come back, because none of them asked me a question, they created the pen that they wanted to sell me. They never asked me what kind of pen I was looking for. Implement that into your training and your communication. Number three, we don't explore budget or goals enough. Like, what are, you know, and that, again, that ties back to questioning. And certainly, you know, we have to be careful here. And it's a, it can be a little bit of a slippery slope, of course. But, you know, the reality is you need to work these in, not at the door, not immediately, but as we're going through. We teach a 12-step ultimate client experience. And as we're getting into step three, step four, step five, I want to start understanding what the goals of my client are for that day. Am I there to just do a broke, fix, repair? Am I there to drop off an estimate because they're going to get three or four more looks? Am I there because they want this thing done forever and price is not a concern? Of course, we don't hear that very much, but you know where I'm going. So the point is, we've got to look at this a little bit and see, you know, kind of, where we're like, where they want to go. Case in point, about 2-3 months ago now, one of our HVAC technicians at the company I own in Colorado went out. Client wanted to add, well, they were selling the home and they wanted to add ducting into the garage because they had finished the garage, but there was no conditioning in it, therefore they won't count, the realtor won't, or the, you know, they won't count it as livable square footage. Well, they wanted the square footage to count for the house, so they got to get air conditioning in there. Okay, cool. So my tech goes out, and a great tech, one of our top guys, he goes out and he goes through the whole thing, learns like what they're wanting to do, all this stuff, goes back, puts it all together. Quite an intense estimate. Took him several hours to pull everything together, what it's going to be. We had a couple different options, you know, we had a mini split option, and then we had some ducting coming in option and different things, and, you know, we're $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, whatever the number is. And the lady goes, oh my gosh, I thought it would be like $150. And so, right, so all of you on the line, some of you are chuckling, and why? Because it's true, and you've experienced it too. So, point being, you know, if he would have just dropped a subtle question early on, like, okay, you know, do you have a budget set aside for this? You're getting ready to sell the house. You're going to recap it back. Do you guys know what you're trying to get this done for? If she would have said $150, we could have saved everybody's time, right? So be mindful of this. We've got video training modules on solution focus service. That's what it's about, solution focus. We're not in the broke fix business. One of my first mentors, Frank Blau, taught me a lot about this business, and I'm carrying his torch in my direction the way that he kind of tapped me to. That's, you know, it's about, you know, it's about changing our mindset from the broke fix client. We used to wait for something to break, go out, bring it back to the way that it used to operate, and then drive away and wait for something to break again. Now we're in the solution business, contrast selling, how you sell up by selling down, how options play against and work with each other to help your client make a good buying decision. So what you can do in your shop is work on reinforcing agreement questions in the as they're going through their sales process. So agreement questions. If we take I'm a drain cleaner at heart. As I started there and as we scaled, I never learned the HVAC and plumbing like technical side. I learned how to operate it, market it, sell it, and deliver it effectively. And so drain cleaning, you walk in, you know, I can swim laps in a septic tank and it doesn't bother me. I should just, you know, don't cut your finger and show me any blood. I'll pass out on you. But the reality is that stuff doesn't really bother me. And I watch technicians, you know, clean a drain without gloves on and then grab a burger. You know, it's just unbelievable. But point is, they're hardened for this. So we've got to look at agreement questions. When you walk in and see sewage in a bathtub in a basement and Miss Jones is there, that is like horrific for her. And for us, it's like, oh, okay, main line's plugged. Do you know if you have a clean? I mean, that's all. It's so easy. What we need to do is work for agreement questions. Like, oh, man, that must have been really frustrating having the sewage come up in this tub, wasn't it? Absolutely, she says. That's so annoying. Man, I noticed, you know, you said you had two small children. This can't be good. No, this isn't good at all. Okay, so if this is something that I could make go away forever and this will never happen again, that's something you'd be interested in, isn't it? And she's going to go, well, yeah. Or she's going to go, well, yeah, but I don't know how much that's going to cost. And I'll go, okay, no problem. We'll get to that. But I just wanted to kind of know where you were at with this. Bam! Opening them up to realize what's actually going on. What are you looking to accomplish today? Simple, concise, and completely underused in the field. So we wait until we sit down at the table, which is like the arm wrestling match that the techs feel like that's the most uncomfortable part. I watch physiology change. I've thought about trying to have them wear those heart monitors. My lovely wife had some challenges last year with her health, and she had to wear one of these things like, you know, wear the monitor her heart for 24 hours or whatever. I want to put one of those on technicians, and I want to see their level spike when they sit down to talk about price, right? So if we understand early on and understand lip service, some clients are going to say, oh, I just want the broke fix. Okay, fine. I'm still going to offer you a replacement or an upgrade because that's part of my responsibility as a professional in your home. Number four, allow maybe over getting straight to a yes or a no. There are so many maybes out there, and you can't spend maybe, and you can't move on from maybe. And when we look at this, it's like there's a lack of focus on our part and our technician's part. And I'll talk more about that here in another mistake, but the reality is a technician feels like a maybe still has hope. Statistics show that maybe means no. Maybe means I don't want to do this. I want to shop you. I'm not sure if I trust you. You walked and tracked some stuff in my house. But I'm not confrontational as a buyer, right? So I don't want to hurt your feelings, even though you kind of wrecked my carpet there by walking across. I'll deal with that. Yeah, I'm going to think about it. I might. And we just let it go. You've got to get over that. You got to go, you know. I'm going to talk about aggressiveness in a moment, but you've got to smoke that out and ask some questions to get, you know, what's it look like? If it's no, if I haven't done everything to serve you and we're not going to move forward, do me a favor so I can learn. And then let's just part friends. It's okay, right? But we just get so stuck there. And techs are so afraid of failure, right, and conflict. And they see maybe as a, oh, it might be coming back, when usually it doesn't if there's not a clear, concise follow-up set in place. So let me kind of spin it like this for you. Think about this. I grew up fishing in lakes in the Colorado River around western Colorado. Now, me and my buddies would go, and we'd go camping or whatever, and we'd fish a lake for a weekend. Now, when we got there on Friday night, I sure wish somebody would have said, hey, guys, there's no fish in here. Why don't you try another fishing hole? Why don't you try another lake? Why don't you go on down? Why don't you go to another part of the Grand Mesa? Because there's no fish in here. I would much rather have that than what I experienced as a kid going up there with my buddies and throwing in that rod and sitting there and waiting and going, maybe there's fish in here. Maybe I'm going to get a bite. Maybe they're going to come back around. If they're not, they're not. I want to know they're not, right? Same is true when it comes to your client sales. We've got training modules on four types of objections, objection labeling, how clients, they label objections, we label objections, what they really mean, kind of teach through some of that. What can you do in your shop? Start reviewing your option sheets. We do this on a weekly basis. You don't have to pick every one. It doesn't matter how big or how small your company is. If you're running 4 trucks, 3 trucks, 10 trucks, 50, 250, you can just pull different, you know, random ones and cover them and go over them and ask questions of the technician, recreate the scenario, whether, you know, and I don't care whether you're mobile or writing option sheets or how you're doing that, it still needs to be reviewed. And it needs to be reviewed in a group. Sometimes it needs to be reviewed one-on-one, but that's a whole different conversation. But everybody learns from everybody. And it depends on your culture and your safe environment. But very important to see where did we leave with a maybe when we could have got a yes or a no. Ride-alongs. If you're not doing ride-alongs, my friends, that is costing you money. And you're not doing them because you don't have enough time. You have too many other things going on. Well, there's all kinds of reasons you'll tell me, but the real reason that you're not is because you're afraid to. And I get it. I rode with my own clients for probably 2 years before I started doing ride-alongs at my own company. Part of it was because I had, at the time, I had my face plastered on the side, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna get made, I'm gonna get seen, you know, they're gonna recognize me. So I let myself off the hook for a couple years with that excuse. Then I went to Australia and crushed it for our clients down there. And I went, wow, this works in the US, it works in Australia, it works in Canada. I'm not doing service to my own company. I gotta just start doing ride along. So if you want, I've created a complete ride along training. And it's free. If you want to go to sellingtext.com, you can download it today. It's based on the philosophy that I get paid really good money to go into companies and do this. It's yours today. Just go to sellingtext.com and check that out. And then you've got to explore, you know, this fear factor of, you know, why are they afraid to get a no? Does that come from the top down? As, you know, like, do they get whipped every time if it's a no? Are they congratulated if they bring in a low ticket but they did close it, as long as their averages are in place? Like, what are they afraid of? And then perhaps what are you afraid of? Get in the field. It can be a manager, but I am highly supportive. It doesn't have to be all the time, but at least get out. We have Robbins, one of our owners. She runs our day-to-day operations as an owner-operator for us at Peterson. She went out and does ride-alongs periodically. Female owner. She'll get in the truck, and obviously the clients know that she's not a technician, and she says, hey, I'm just here to help my techs and observe the client experience, and they love it. So don't be afraid. Get out there and check it out. Number five, lack of confidence. Oh, man, if I could teach one thing, my friends, it would be confidence. When I go into a company, my goal is to elevate the confidence of as many team members as I possibly can. This is the number one skill to improve your life, your business, everything. Your life right now is a reflection of your own level of confidence, period. And you can challenge that on different levels. Oh, Kenny, you don't understand. This happened to me. That happened to me. I get that. And I'm fortunate enough to be in a coaching group with some really, really high-level entrepreneurs, and they talk about confidence all the time. And these people are making millions and millions and doing different things and changing the world. I got to talk with Damon John from Shark Tank a couple weeks ago at an event we were at. He was talking about confidence and how he's challenged as he built FUBU to a $6 billion business and all this. So it's okay to have challenged confidence, but work on it every day. Now, I use a concept Dan Sullivan taught me, one of my mentors from Strategic Coach, called confidence cash. And I want you to think about your wallet. And you've got a certain level of currency in there. And if I swing by and pickpocket you or take it from you or punch you in the face and take it from you or whatever, you're going to lose some and you're going to want some back, right? Same thing happens with confidence. I want you to think about it like a currency. And you've always got to be adding. You've got to be making deposits on a daily basis, on a call-by-call basis sometimes, because all of your markets, you're going to run into crazy people, and they're going to try and rob that from you. They're going to try and take that currency away, and you've got to constantly be building it. So when they take some and you lose some, you go, man, okay, got to build it right back up. We've got an instant meeting maker on building confidence specifically, our online school. But here's where I want you to think about this too, is when you're exploring skill practice and doing exploratory skill practice. Now, I'm big on transformational vocabulary because I think that words turn into feelings and thoughts, and what those turn into, if you take action, it ends up changing your life. And so I don't like the word role play. I never have. I wasn't in, you know, drama club when I was in high school or whatever. I was a jock and whatever, and I wasn't in the plays and all this. And then when I started getting into coaching and speaking, and their role play, I'm like, that's not me. Well, skill practice, oh, I'm an athlete. I get that. I've got to practice my skills. I got to elevate my game. Technicians resonate more with skill practice. They're still going to fight you on it, get up and play the customer and do this, but it's incredibly powerful and sometimes a very underutilized opportunity. So again, that ties back to your own level of confidence, because for you to get up and do it, think about this. When I first started coaching and training big companies, I went to about a $50 million company, and I had all these technicians in the room, and there was two owners. And I was teaching a, you know, sales process and went through and all that. And I got to the point, I said, okay, who wants to go first? We're going to do some skill practice. And the two owners of a $50 million company got up and said, we're going first. And they got in front of that room and they practiced. They don't run service calls. They're running a $50 million company. Oh, my gosh. But it was so important to them that it's a part of their culture. And you know, to teach that first-year apprentice, look, we're willing to do anything we're asking you to do. So you got to dig deep sometimes, but check in when it comes to how you're doing skill practice at your shop. Six, lack of belief. Biggie, biggie, biggie. By the way, let me, I probably should have mentioned this early on. If you're writing that, these down or taking notes, these are not in specific order. I just snagged 12 and said these are what they are. Okay, so it's not one, you know, number one's not more important than five or so on and so forth. So, lack of belief. Definitely ties to confidence, but it's actually deeper because it's deep-seated. And this affects your own self, your company, the price, the culture, the vision. If a technician, think about it, if a technician doesn't have belief in who you are, what you do, or what you stand for, they're going to have a really hard time believing in the price. If they don't know where the price came from, they're going to have a really hard time believing in the price and the vision and the culture, right? And so you can the ball can be dropped in belief at a lot of different points. And interesting that I have the opportunity to share some time with you guys today. I just found out yesterday that Robin, our co-owner operator, brought in one of our top guys that been having a little challenge. He's been getting a little more, you guys know, top performers generally can, they try to suck the life out of you if you let them, right? And she had it, and she was done with it, and she called him in and said, I need to know if you're 100% on board with us or not. And he kind of hem-hawed around, and he said, I don't know that I can answer that. And she said, no problem. You have the rest of the day to decide. And she sent him home. And so I haven't talked to her yet today. My gut tells me she fired him, and I probably would have fired him right then, but that's not the point. The point is that you're either with us or you're against us. And people can be against us because they don't believe, and they don't believe because we haven't shared with them the who, what, why, when, and how of what's going on. I mean, this starts from the courting process to hiring, through the onboarding, through the mission, vision, values, all of that is tied to this. So we've got training modules on the purpose behind selling. So, you know, nobody wants to, you know, the old adage, nobody likes to be sold, but everybody likes to buy. We get to what's the purpose behind this? The power of the mind. You know, I said it at the top of this time together. You know, the most powerful thing in the world is a changed mind. When you see technicians move and shift, or salespeople, you know, I'm saying technicians, a lot of people are running selling techs. But if you've got dedicated salespeople, selling supervisors, comfort advisor, whatever, this applies. And the cost of doing business, share it with them. They have no idea what it takes to run these companies, how much health insurance is and different things. And you don't have to do it necessarily line item by line item on your income statement, and you're afraid that they're going to see how much money you're making. And the reality is that you should be afraid for them to see how much money you're not making, because they think it's a lot more than what you make, right? You get a new car every 4 or 5 years, they think, wow, look at this. You're flush, right? And then I'm not making any money. So the more you open up and share, the more that they can understand and believe. And then I want you to think about yourself. I want you to challenge your own beliefs, right? So when, you know, think about it. I mean, we've done exercises in the company about beliefs and kind of what's driving people and different things like that. And, you know, we're all raised in different ways and come from different places, and all those things form things for us. And I teach a concept. I believe it's the three P's. And it's parents, peers, and previous experience. That's really what drives it, right? So you start out young, and your parents have an impact. And you know, my story kind of took a turn. My father ended up being an outlaw biker and riding in San Diego for a rival gang of the Hell's Angels and different things like that. And my friends, I found myself in a in a jail in Lake Havasu City, Arizona at 19 years old, in a cell by myself going, what am I doing? Now, I'm not blaming Dad for that, but it definitely impacted my beliefs about drugs and alcohol and different things like that that in me there and ultimately put me in the military and completely changed my life forever. Guess what? Past experience. I got in the Army. I had a different experience. My life changed. That's what it's about. You come from a certain place. I come from a certain place. Your technicians come from a certain place. And many of them have been beat down. They have been told that they're not worthy. They've had all these things. They didn't do good in school. We as leaders have got to address this. We've got to address it with us first, and then we've got to help them to the best of our ability. Number seven, huge one. Differentiation, lack thereof. My goodness, we are in such a sea of sameness. I mean, I come from a small town. I travel a ton, but was living in small town America in Western Colorado, and recently we moved to Scottsdale, and I'm driving around Scottsdale, Phoenix area. I mean, there's air conditioning companies everywhere here, and they all look the same, almost all of them. There's a couple big players that really get it, but I mean, when you look at it, what makes you different? Does your technician even know? Because guess what? Your client doesn't. We're dime a dozen. We are a commodity in the marketplace until we make ourselves something else. So, I see this show up differentiating the technician as a professional, right? They've got to differentiate themselves. They've got to differentiate the product or the service that they're offering. They've got to differentiate you as a company to make sure that we're not looking like the sea of sameness and everybody's all playing the same game and offering the same things. And then, because if everything is the same, then price becomes an issue. But when nothing is the same, then price can't become an issue, right? We had to outfit our new apartment here, bought a new bed recently, and man, that's a crazy business there, right? And so we went into one of these franchise things and shopped around and looked, and I mean, there were just more than we planned on spending, and we bought a bed not too long ago, so we kind of wanted that same one and whatever. Long story short, I mean, they were quite a bit higher than what we had seen. And these franchises are everywhere, by the way. And literally yesterday, we were driving by one, and they have a lowest price guarantee or it's free. And I said, look at that. And Christy's like, how's that? What the heck are they thinking? I said, well, guess what? Because they're probably having stuff privately made for that franchise. There is not another product. So they can differentiate and say, look, there's not one. You can get that one you bought, same maker, but here's what's different about ours. That's the power of it, right? So be mindful of those things. We've got training modules on high standards. I did a thing with our titanium coaching group yesterday, our high-level group that gets together every week. Had three words: raise your standards. And when you get yourself first, and then you get your technicians and your frontline team, your CSRs, DSRs, warehouse, and when everybody starts raising their standards, really good things happen. And then, of course, strong impressions, like that's very important, as technicians don't sometimes pay attention to that or see that. So here's an exercise I want you to do in your company. Make it totally worth it. Just have everybody come into one of your tech meetings, and if you're not having tech meetings, have them. But don't meet just to meet. I mean, our company meets 3 days a week on a normal week, and we structure them different. We have different trainings, but we're very invested in our team and our people. Now, bring them in and just pose this question and just start roundtabling it, have them jot some down, have them work in small groups. If you're a bigger company, whatever that looks like, you can hang some flip charts on the wall even and have different categories and say, what makes us different here? Like, what makes us different in customer service? What makes us different in product offering? What makes us different with training and education? What makes us different with warranty and guarantees? What makes us different? See, and have them do it, though. And you can guide it and you can seed it, but you don't want to answer all these, because two things are going to happen. One, you're going to find out where their heads are at, And if they have a really, really hard time, guess what? Your client doesn't have a clue what makes you different. You got to make this important. You've got to make it, you know, you've got to kind of make it a must in order to get this to happen. Okay? So don't underestimate the power of differentiation. People buy for differentiation. Eight, they don't see themselves as doctors. I mentioned this earlier, but this is I get passionate about this one because I believe in these techs so much. I mean, after an onsite when I was in Montana, if you're in Montana, I know Paul's up in Wisconsin right now. We were just talking about Green Bay a little bit ago, but if you're in Montana, you're there because you want to be. You didn't just happen to stop by or end up there or whatever. You're there because you want to be. And these techs I rode with, I mean, they were just unbelievable people. And I wrote a column for Plumbing and Mechanical Magazine after that onsite called Technicians Are the Salt of the Earth. Check it out online. I'm sure it's in the archives. But the reality is technicians need to see themselves like doctors. And we were taught, and I was taught, and you were taught, that there's professions and then there's us. And we got into this trade because either your family was in it, you stumbled in it, somebody had an offer for you, so you started, or you said, I'm not going to college, I'm going to trade school. And all these things were robbing your confidence and challenging who you are as a person. And I want you to see them as professionals. I want you to see yourself first and foremost as a business operator that's turning into a business owner, two very different things. And I want your techs to see themselves as absolute licensed professionals. They've done as much schooling as doctors, and doctors don't necessarily get it. I'll mention that in a moment. But I was actually, crazy enough, I was in Phoenix here several years ago, and I was doing my own technician training school. We do a live school, public schools. And I had maybe 40, 50 techs in the room, and I very rarely watch the news, but if I'm in a market for the first time or haven't been for a while, I'll kick it on and see what's going on locally, you know, just to kind of know a little bit. So I was watching the news while I was working out that morning and before the class, and it was the day that or the government was shut down, right? So you remember that a few years back, the government shut down. They closed the government for two solid weeks, right? After last night, I think some of us might want, okay, never mind. So, but they shut down the government for two solid weeks, and let me ask you, if I could ask you, you know, face-to-face, and of course, we'll open for questions here toward the end of the cast here, but it's like they were shut down, and none of us even, it didn't affect us. Here it was a big deal. In the Phoenix area, it was a big deal because, you know, you got Grand Canyon, they were losing millions of dollars a day as a state because they weren't getting that revenue. But if you didn't have a family member that was furloughed or you didn't directly work for the government, it really didn't affect you that much. And I got these technicians, and I went, you know, here's the thing. Let's not take a sewer call nationwide for 2 weeks. Let's not respond to a no cool or a no heat nationwide for 2 weeks. Let's not go to a no power call nationwide for 2 weeks. None of us run a service call anywhere in this country for 2 weeks. What's this country look like? And these kids looked up and they went, I said, they were like third world countries. I said, that's right. But guess what? You can shut down some healthcare stuff for a while. You can shut down. You see, you can't have the hospital without us. You can't have a doctor without us. So we've got to elevate them. We've got to raise how they see themselves. And they are actually the doctors that allow doctors to do their work. We got training on expert status. That's what it's about. You've got to show them. So I teach a whole concept on that in that training. Solution focused. We talked about that. Personal connection. Got to have personal connection in there. So think about, you know, the prescription without the proper diagnosis here. I mean, that's a crazy thing. And obviously it happens. And you know, we see... You go to the doctor and, I mean, they have to ask you some questions. They have to learn. Now, they don't have to because they don't. But, you know, we got complete different diagnoses on Christy when she had her thyroid challenge last year. Totally. And fortunately, we don't accept the way the mainstream runs or operates, and we did different things and found different answers. But if we just took that. So my point is doctors don't have it all figured out. I won't even get started about lawyers and accountants and all that stuff. But we need to raise their awareness on this. Lack of follow-up, huge. I mean, there, you know, this comes from, I don't care whether it's the tech doing it, well, I do care because there are certain ways I like to see it done, but regardless of how you do it, figure out doing it. And, you know, a lot of systems that work well, the tech has, if they set a follow-up at the end of the call, which they should be doing, if you get that all infamous maybe, excellent, set a follow-up time you can call, time you can come back, whatever that looks like. If that time expires, then the company takes it over. And you have somebody dialing for dollars and making follow-ups on proposals and doing different things. I got a client that is doing about $4 million a year, and a million of it is coming from follow-ups. Think about it. Don't pick up the phone. Guess what? You just lost 25% of your business. It's unbelievable that we allow these things to happen. So set follow-ups times. You've got to have the desire, and they've got to have the understanding. The technicians feel like, oh, I ran it, it's done, it's over. No, it's not. If it's not over, it's not over until you get a no, and that's where I want. If I don't get it at the door, then I'm going to follow up, no different than when we talked about yes versus no versus maybe. And then you got to think about your after-unit marketing program too. So we break marketing at Blue Collar. We talk about it in before unit, during unit, and after unit. Most of us spend 95% of our marketing budget on the before unit trying to get the phone to ring. Then we go through the during unit, the sales process and all that. Okay, we invest a little bit there, and then the after unit. We're not sending newsletters. We're not sending follow-up cards. We're not sending thank yous. We're not sending, you know, so you got to be mindful of that. And I created a training based on our own company. We increased reviews 300% in 6 weeks by making a few simple tweaks, a few simple things that can totally impact this. Number 10, prejudge. Okay, let's talk turkey here. There's no such thing as this. And you're going, well, wait a minute. I've been telling my techs, don't prejudge the call. And I could walk into your market, and it's easy. I go, what's the zip code? They're like, what do you mean? So what's the zip code? Well, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, everybody's got the zip code where nobody wants to get the call. Nobody wants the page. Nobody wants to see a dispatch with this zip. Oh, and then they start throwing them. Oh, yeah, it's 81520. It's da-da-da-da. You know, it's 81520 in our market is why I say that. So you look at those things, and for 10 years in this business, I taught don't prejudge. And then I was on a ride-along outside of Philadelphia. I taught the whole don't prejudge a call, just go run it with an open mind every time, every way, the exact same time. And we rolled up on this house, and there was a for sale sign in the yard. And Kenny went, oh, inside. I went, oh, man, the house is for sale. I'm only here for a few minutes, you know, a few days with these people. I want to have the, you know, the best swings possible to see the actual, this one's for sale. So I didn't say anything, but I caught it. And the technician, what was really cool, the tech saw the sign. He looked at me, goes, don't say a word, let's go. And we got out, we went and we ran the call. It was a free tune-up call that turned into a lead that's turned into a sold furnace. So what's my point? My point is we all prejudge. There are studies that say you prejudge or you judge 14 things about a person you meet in the first 3 seconds, right? So what I teach now is catch it. When you catch it, so you get the page, 8152, oh, man. All right, it is what it is. Hey, let's go. Let's go do the best we can with it, right? So that's where our instant meeting maker about the importance of a process within your own company, within your own technicians, whatever you're teaching, they have their own variation. Trust me, I see too many times. I teach my own and they have their own variation, right? So, and then the other thing, consistency. I was talking to a sales manager of one of our clients. Actually one of our larger clients, and we work with a ton of small, a ton in between, and some larger ones, and this is about a $30 million company, and I was asking him what his biggest challenges are, and he said, man, Kenny, it's consistency. I said, wow, that's interesting. I work with companies that are just adding a truck, one guy adding a truck. What's his challenge? Consistency. 3-4 trucks, what's their challenge? Consistency, right? So be mindful of those things. That's a great training I would encourage you to use. Prejudging versus conscious awareness. That's the thing. When you judge it, it takes conscious awareness to catch it. And then progress and practice, reinforce those wins, you know. So those markets, when somebody sells, you know, when you have a good sale or you have a good client or something happens in a in a zip code. And it's not just about the zip code. It's about judging the person that when they hit you at the door and go, oh, I don't have any money. I'm not buying today. I'm not all that, you know, whatever. You've got to be aware to move on from those. 11, being too aggressive. Now, I'm going to tie back to the whole car thing for a moment, right? So the reality is when you're what's too aggressive mean to a technician? That's a great question to ask. Because, you know, they get pushy. Like, and I mainly see this from top producers. Why? Because they have the highest level of confidence. Why? Because they have conditioned success by asking for the sale, by different things. But then what happens is they get into their own kind of success, right? And success you can let your guard down. And I see it. Some clients have me come in and work with brand new technicians, and then the technicians that have been there like 8, 9, 10 years, if they have that many, or that old, like 6, 7, 8 years, whatever. The ones that have been there a long time, because the ones that have been there a long time, they get in their rut too. And so if they get in a rut and they want to sell, and sometimes they need to sell, depending on your situation or what that looks like, it can end up coming across too aggressive. So we teach a concept, simple, effective presentations. It's just keep it simple, but keep it effective. You know, why do we use these used car analogies? Because we don't understand them. It gets a bad rap, but what's interesting, I've got a friend of mine that's actually he's in the major car business. He owns a Chevy dealer in town, and they bring in sales training and different things, and the reality is that process works or they wouldn't keep using it. Now, doesn't mean that I'm a fan of it, doesn't mean that I'm going to subscribe to it or teach it or anything like that, but when you're too aggressive, you turn people off. So when else does it show up? Your top techs, like I said, if you're on a commission base or incentive pay of any kind, they're used to making their money. Maybe shoulder season, it slows down a little bit. They're not getting as many swings. School time comes. Whatever those look like, they feel pressure. Boom, they get too aggressive. Why? Because they're too numbers focused versus being client focused. Now, last one. And you're like, hey, what? Wait a minute, Ken. You said 11 was too aggressive, and now 12 is not aggressive enough, and that's right. And that's the one. The too aggressive one is, I don't see it that much, but it is something to be mindful of and to watch out for. But not aggressive enough. I see this all the time. Every company I go into, many of the techs that I ride with, and this is about just asking for the sale. I mean, one of our 12 steps is about that. You just got to ask for it, right? And this takes confidence because there's, you know, I tie back to that confidence piece because there's, you know, an aggressive, again, transformational vocabulary. I'm using aggressive with us here on the line, but they don't want to be aggressive at all. Obviously, I want them to get the sale. I want them to ask for the sale. All around the customer service delivery concept, I'm not just talking sales here. It's the entire process, but they don't want to come across pushy, and they don't want to come across like that guy that, whoops, where am I going? This one, right? They don't want to be this. And sometimes their perception is your top techs are doing this. They've ridden with them when a top tech asks for the sale, and the tech riding with them isn't comfortable enough with it, and they go, oh, I don't want to do that. So then they go, oh, I'm just not going to be aggressive enough. And it's tied to confidence. It's tied to belief. And I tie it to responsibility, okay? So here's the deal. You know, I think that if you believe in your product, your service, your offering, your company, if you believe that it's absolutely the best value, then I think you need to get aggressive about asking for it. In a couple minutes, I'm going to ask you to spend a dollar. Why? Because I believe that will change your life. I believe it's my responsibility to ask you for that dollar, because if I don't, you're not going to get exposed to opportunity to change your life, and that's part of what I do. So we can tie it to plumbing and heating. We can tie it to whatever, but if you believe in your product, then it's your responsibility to do everything you humanly possibly can to get your client to invest with you. We teach a concept called the 6 C's of delivering options. When you're sitting at the table, when you're working through, you don't have to be pushy. Aggressive and pushy, two different things. You know, how bad do you want it? That's one that we teach where I draw out from the technicians. I get great feedback on that because they've got to turn it into a want, not just needs. And, of course, like I said, they're afraid of being too pushy. Think about this. Where do you want to go to lunch? Well, I don't know. Where do you want to go? Oh, I don't know. I had tacos last night. Oh, pizza the night before. I mean, people have a 10-minute conversation. They can't make a decision. Our clients need help making decisions. And then you have that situation where you say, hey, where do you want to go to lunch? Somebody goes, oh, you know what? I've been craving a hamburger. Let's go down to Burger Theory. Oh, okay, cool. People want to be led, my friends. Biggest sales mistakes, talk too much, presumptions versus questions. Don't explore budget or goals. Allow maybe over getting to yes or no. Lack of confidence, lack of belief, lack of differentiation. Don't see themselves as, you can swap out that word for any type of professional. Lack of follow-up, prejudge, too aggressive, not aggressive enough.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.